welcome to the Stay at Home School Mom podcast. My name is Mary Ellen Barrett, and I am joined by my partner and my good buddy, Ginny Suford. And we are here to talk about chickens. And we are really excited to talk about chickens. This is going to be good. But first, we are blessed to be sponsored by some wonderful organizations, and the primary one is Seton Home Study School. Seton is a fully accredited, thoroughly Catholic home study school that provides books, daily lesson plans, grading, and counseling services. Really everything a homeschooling family needs to be successful. So check them out at www.setonhome.org. And if you watch the beginner guide video on the website there, there's a coupon code at the end so you can get a few dollars off if you enroll. Now, Ginny, would you introduce our special guest, who is also a fellow podcaster? So that's kind of neat.
A very elite group we podcast. Are. Dahlia Monterosso is a chicken keeper. Is that an actual term, chicken keeper? I'm not sure.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. Wow.
And a popular teacher on the basics of backyard chicken keeping. She speaks and teaches classes on the joys of chicken keeping and is passionate about broadening the community of chicken keepers to be more diverse and more inclusive. She's the creator of the website and YouTube channel, Welcome to Chickenlandia. Did I say that right?
You did.
The podcast is Bawk Talk. That's B-A-W-K-T-A-W-K, Bawk Talk. At an online, I can have fun saying that.
Bawk Talk. I love everything about this.
I do too. That's a lot of fun. At an online course called Chickenlandia's Backyard Chickens 101. She also hosted a TEDx talk titled, I Dream of Chickens. I love this. I'm just loving this one.
And I do.
Dahlia is the author of a book, Let's All Keep Chickens, The Down-to-Earth Guide to Natural Practices for Healthier Birds and a Happier World. It's a comprehensive guide for both beginners and experienced chicken keepers. The book has also gained popularity among homeschooling families who appreciate its educational value as part of their learning curriculum. Dahlia lives in Bellingham, Washington with her family, continuing her mission to share the joy and simplicity of chicken keeping to the world. Thank you for joining us, Dahlia.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
I have to tell you, I have been looking forward to this and my husband is absolutely terrified because I have been saying for years that I would love to have, I have a pretty backyard for my area. I live in, I'm a suburb of New York City. But we are allowed to have chickens here. We can't have roosters, but we can have chickens. And I would just like a little coop with a few chickens. And he has been so dead set against it. Understandably, it's work. It's, you know, I don't know. But he's terrified right now. And I'm going to hang up and go buy a chicken or something.
Yeah, so that'll be my agenda through the whole podcast.
There's a lot of ticks on Long Island and Lyme disease, and chickens eat ticks.
There you go.
There you go. That's actually a plus column thing. I'm making a list here. So I watched a few of your videos. I watched probably way too many of them. Oh, I spent a lot of time on this. It was great. And in your introduction, in one of the introductory videos, you made a big point about before you get started, you have to check and see, first of all, is it legal? Things like drainage and stuff like that. So it's not legal everywhere to have chickens in your own backyard that you pay taxes for, right? And your own home that you buy, right? Is it more often than not legal, or what are you?
A lot of HOA communities, I would imagine that has quite a bit to do with it too.
Yeah, definitely. The HOAs are tough, but you know, I mean, more and more it's gaining popularity. More and more cities are coming to the realization that it's actually good for your city. You know, it's great for your communities. So I've been encouraged, especially in the last few years, and definitely when COVID happened, it was like the whole backyard chicken keeping thing just shot right up. I mean, I had my YouTube channel before then, but when COVID happened, that's when it really took off. So, yeah, you know, I think a lot of people went out and panic bought chickens, which is,
is okay. Eggs got to be ridiculously expensive there for a while.
$7 a dozen for eggs, for Pete's sake.
There is that too. And, you know, one of the things that I tell people is because there's a lot of information out there, you know, a lot of opinions where people will say, oh, it's expensive to keep chickens and, you know, you shouldn't think about getting them because it's just really not worth it. And I really want to dispel those ideas because I don't think that they're true. I mean, if you go all across the world, you can find the poorest people in the world and you also find their chickens.
That's true. So, I didn't think of that. But when I was watching your videos, Dahlia has a lot of great, she has a very pretty chicken coop and yard and it's beautiful, but you also showed like the nesting boxes that it could also be like a dog crate. You were very creative in that you don't have to have this huge expensive layout. You can make do with things. And poor people have chickens.
Yes, they do. And I really feel like everybody has a right to not only grow their own food, but just have that, you know, have access to that perfect protein, the egg. Mm-hmm. And not only that, but they have a right to experience nature. And, you know, we did go through a time where there were lockdowns and everything, and a lot of people were stuck in their apartments. And I think during that time, I thought to myself, you know, everybody should be able to have this experience. You know, even if you can't go out and into the community, you should be able to have a connection with nature no matter where you live. So that's really a big part of what I want to do in the world is make sure that people can have this access to nature, can have this connection with nature, because I think ultimately it's really good for humanity. Like when you, because it's in all of our cultures, like it's in all of our history.
Oh, sure.
And so when we connect with that, inevitably we will connect with our culture because culture is always connected with nature. So when people connect with who they are kinder to the people around them. And so this is how we're saving the world. One chicken at a time.
One
That's how we're doing
time.
It in Chickenlandia.
Well, I might also point out, I don't keep animals of any type except a dog because we travel a lot and we take the dog with us. But for those people who garden, and I garden a lot, you want to put your chicken yard right where you're going to have your garden next year. I don't want to get into too many details because it's a family channel, but you will be thrilled with the results of having chickens on your garden because there is nothing better than chicken manure for your garden. It is
yes,
great.
It does. Yes, it does need for vegetables. You know, it does need some time to cook a little bit. You don't want to have fresh chicken manure on in your garden because it will burn the plants.
Right. But I'm saying this year's chicken yard, it could be next year's garden
yes.
after it's wintered over a little bit. So it can save you money. Besides the fact that where I live and other people keep chickens, I pay $2 a dozen for eggs.
There you go.
Wow. And they're fresh. They're about as fresh
yeah.
as you're going to get.
And there's nothing like a fresh egg.
No. And I think what you said about connecting to nature and connecting to culture is very much what homeschooling families, especially the homesteading homeschooling families, are trying to do with their children. You know, if they have these little pocket farms and homesteads, they grow most of their food and they keep chickens and maybe they have a dairy goat or something like that. I think it's about teaching children where this all comes from. Like I grew up in suburban New York. My meat came in a package. Like my eggs came
Same.
In a carton.
Yeah.
And I never, my vegetables were frozen. I never really thought about it until I started doing my own gardening and trying to teach and we belong to a CSA and stuff like that and taking my kids out to the local farms. I think it's important for them to connect to where their food comes from, you know? And I don't know. I just find that important that it's better for them and better for your health and better for your environment and better for your community if you eat as locally as possible. And there's nothing more local than your backyard.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm right there with you.
We all agree.
I think that we are seeing a movement. Again, we're homeschoolers and there is a homesteading is a bad because people think right away off grid that you're getting your water out of the well. A lot of these people have running water, but the fact is that they do want to go back to a simpler lifestyle. And if
yes.
you are homeschooling your children all day, you really don't have time for complicated machines in your house. You don't have time for 10,000 different, you know, appliances on your kitchen counter. You want a simpler life. And
yes.
there's nothing simpler than gathering your food from your own property, whether it's garden or whether it's your eggs or whether some chicken has to go to his eternal reward. There's nothing, it's right there.
Yeah.
Yes.
So what would you say to somebody who's listening and they think, this sounds so appealing to me And chickens, they look like fun. On your YouTube channel, some of them are quite funny. And you have one that looks just like my feather duster mop thing. The brown and white thing. You just see, yes. I was like, oh, my feather duster just ran by. Some of they're very amusing and they, but, and they have personality. You can definitely see that. But so now I'm, it's so appealing to me. How do I jump in? What do I do? Like, what's the first thing I do? Because I don't know anything.
Well, usually people will start to research and they will go online and there is no shortage of information. There's lots and lots of information. The problem is, and I think homeschooling families will really relate to this because there's a lot of similarities. A lot of that information is conflicting and people have really strong opinions about how you should raise chickens.
Yes, we can relate to that. Yes, we can relate to that.
Yes. So I think it's very important to keep it simple. What I would say to people is always have in your mind the fact that human beings have kept chickens, you know, we've domesticated chickens thousands of years ago. So this relationship is really millennia old. You know, it's a long relationship. It really should be the most natural thing that you've ever done. Like it is in, it's within us. It's in, like I said earlier, it is in all of our histories. It's in almost every culture on the planet in a pretty significant way. So try not to make things too complicated. It's like when you think about education for children, I know that, and I certainly have been there in my own experience, where it's we tend to overthink and overcomplicate. And we forget that since the beginning of humans, we have been teaching our children.
Like, yes, exactly.
You know, organized schools, that is fairly new. And the way that we keep chickens in the modern world, most of that is fairly new. So just remember that ultimately you're doing something that is very natural. Keep it simple. Find somebody that, you know, whether it's me or someone else, someone that you can relate with on like a personal level, like you kind of vibe with their idea about things. And just stick with that and don't make things too complicated because you can, if you do that, you can get stuck and you will find that it takes a really, you keep kind of putting it off because you're getting so much information, you're getting overwhelmed. Right. Yeah. Make a date. You know, I tell homeschooling families, like, make a date with your kids. Make sure it's a very flexible date. You want it to be like, in this week or in this month, we're getting baby chicks because things happen with baby chicks. Like sometimes you can't get them on the day, you know, right. If you make a date, right. They might not be available or whatever. So make a moment in the future and say, this is when we're getting our baby chicks or this is when we're getting our chickens, and they can have fun kind of counting down to that time. And then when you get there, just do it. Okay. And you can do it. You can do it. It's easy and you can do it.
That's and start with Chickenlandia, the YouTube channel, because that made seem so first doable and second enjoyable. So I y'all should start there. But in the meantime, one second, we're going to take a quick sponsor break. We have Seton Home Study School is our main sponsor here on the channel, but we do have other sponsors and we are incredibly grateful to them. So if you will just hang with us and we will be right back and listen to this quick message.
It's great. I think my Seton education really gave me a lot of the truth, but it was cool to go into an area where you could dialogue with other people and kind of pursue the truth in a different way than receiving it. To learn not only in the class how to be good or what is good, but then to also learn outside the class, learning from learning through relationship. I've grown so much as an individual because I can engage not only with the text we read in class, but anything I encounter in the world, I am able to say, okay, this is Hegel talking. I can figure out how to find the truth with people who don't even really know how to dialogue well, because I've been taught so well how to dialogue in the classroom and outside of the classroom with sparring with friends.
I'm Anthony Klein, a Seton Home Studies School graduate and a junior here at Belmont Abbey's Honors College.
The Honors College at Belmont Abbey. To learn more, visit www.bac.edu/honors.
Hi, and welcome back. Thank you so much to our sponsor. We really appreciate it. And for those of you that weren't listening earlier, we are speaking today to Dalia Monteroso. She is a passionate chicken keeper, and she's also sort of a chicken keeper educator. I could really get into these words. who will tell you basically everything you need to know about keeping chickens. But what I've really enjoyed about our conversation so far, Dalia, is this idea that this is really a natural process. And I see that here. I'm a New York City kid too. You might have gotten from the accent. So I was like 10 before I didn't realize milk didn't grow in bottles. But now I live in the country, in the middle of nowhere, and very happily so. And you're right, people have chickens all the time around here. You'll know, you'll drive past and there's the chickens on the side lawn. We have real free range chickens here.
Yes.
Real things.
Great.
Because they are free ranging all over the place. And they're eating ticks. And what, just to throw in for people that might be worrying about the money here, I was down at my neighbor's garden one day and I was picking corn. She was letting me pick a few ears of corn. And her chickens, as soon as they realized somebody was picking corn, went into the garden. And you can hear that sort of murmur they make.
Yes.
they're hoping I drop something that will be valuable to them. But anyhow, she was kind of picking cabbage, I think, at the time. So when you pick a head of cabbage, for those of you that are gardeners, you know, you have a few leaves left at the bottom. And she just throws that into the chicken yard, and the chickens eat that.
Yeah, and so, it's wonderful for them.
Yeah, it's great for them. So at least during the summer months, you're not spending a fortune on feed.
Yeah, I mean, there's many things that you can do. There is a school of thought where it's like your chickens should only eat commercial feed, and that should be their sole diet. And when I think about that, and some other things that educators will say, I hear that with the understanding that a lot of the information that we're getting is coming through the lens of factory farms. Mm-hmm. And so there's a philosophy that they have because they have to have a highly controlled environment because it's an environment that isn't even conducive to life, much less, you know, to thrive in. It's very... you know, chickens that live there are very vulnerable to disease and, you know, other issues. So, but in reality, chickens, we have had this wonderful symbiotic relationship with chickens for thousands of years. And traditionally, it has been a very sustainable practice. You know, we have our chickens in the backyard. We protect the chickens. We feed them our scraps. They clean up our scraps, and in return, they give us eggs and meat. And so that has traditionally been what human beings have done. Now, chickens these days, especially in the United States and other parts of the Western world, they have been bred in such a way where their nutritional requirements are extremely high because they lay just a crazy amount of eggs. They're bred to lay a ridiculous amount of eggs in the first 2 years of their life because most chickens don't live past a year. If you know, for in a factory farm, a chicken's usually not going to live past a year, maybe two. So they're bred to really lay the most amount of eggs in that short period of time. They're not bred for resilience.
Oh, I didn't know that. Wow.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah, they have very, very high nutritional needs. So I do recommend a base, you know, if you can, I recommend to have a base of some chicken feed. But then, of course, you should supplement their diet with fresh, you know, things that you could throw away, but is a wonderful food for chickens, like fresh vegetable scraps, you know, low sugar fruits. Things that your family isn't going to eat that you would likely waste can go to your chickens and go into that cycle, you know, that symbiotic cycle. and end up being very beneficial to you. And that's another way that I say, you know, why doesn't every community have this? Because it is so good for our local environments to have this practice in place if we're doing it right.
Yeah. So it really does seem like there's no real big downside unless you have somebody who's clearly not taking care of their chickens. But I mean, there are people who clearly don't take care of their dogs, but
yes,
nobody's banning dogs. So yeah,
exactly.
Every community has dogs. It's silly. And, you know, dogs are wonderful. We love our dogs, but they're not giving us eggs. Like
They're
consumers. They're not helping us out.
I have to tell they're like, hey, pick up my poop.
Right, exactly.
I have to tell you, I have another story, again, living in the middle of nowhere now. About 5 miles from my house, we have Quonset huts. And I've seen cars there, but I've never seen anything else there. And I asked one of the neighbors, I said, well, you know, what's in those Quonset? She says, well, those are free range chickens.
Oh, wow.
So if you look at the side, you'll see there's fenced in areas. Apparently the government sets a regulation. If to call a chicken free range, it has to have, say, a foot of outside space that it can go into. Except here's the local joke. Nobody's ever seen a chicken in the outside spaces. Yeah. Not once. Not ever. So you're paying all this money for free range eggs and they're not free ranging.
I hate to.
You don't have to make them do it.
Yeah, no, I hate to break it to people. Like the free range eggs, that's a, you know, that's greenwashing or whatever. That's really not accurate for the most part. Pasture raised is different. So if you're looking for the most humane eggs, get pasture raised if you can afford that. But it's very expensive. You know, I would never blame anybody for just getting the eggs that they can afford. But if you can afford it, I think it's important to make that vote with your dollar so that we can move away from these practices that are not only bad for chickens, but they're bad for people. Like it's a real risk. It's a real health risk, the way that we have things set up in our food system. And I am certainly an advocate for making some changes in the right direction.
I agree. I completely agree. When you see the difference between a backyard chicken egg and an egg you buy in the supermarket, just the difference in the color, the yolks are just, it's incredible how beautiful this product is when it's just from your backyard, when it's local like that. It really is. Because I've bought eggs at our local farms here and they are ridiculously expensive. But I mean, the difference is incredible. I mean, and I'm not even much, I hate to confess this, but I don't really like to eat an egg. I'm just not an egg person, but my kids eat them all the time. And when you get these special eggs, it's like, they said it's not even like eating the same food. So I can see so many benefits to this. I was talking before about your channel. I saw that it looks like you have several different breeds going on there.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Now, is there a benefit to that or should people, you know, spread out with breeds, or is it okay to just start with one particular breed that seems like a simple chicken, or what's your recommendation there?
Simple chicken. You're talking like a New York City kid there, kiddo.
The starter chicken.
What's a simple
I understood
chicken?
Perfectly.
Thank you. He's always picking on me.
Yeah. There are definitely chickens that you would not, like if you're just getting into it. When I got into it, I was very new. I mean, I grew up in the suburbs of Dallas. I did not even hold a baby chick until I was in my 20s. I think I held one once. So I was really new at it. And when you're first starting out, you don't really want to start out with something that mainly is not good for the climate that you live in. So if you're in upstate New York and it can get pretty cold and you've got some fancy chicken from Malaysia with a, you know, 5 foot long tail,
it's only going to look beautiful till it freezes to death.
Yeah. I mean, you're going to be stressed out. Like, of course, there's a way to get them through that, but you're going to be stressed. And we don't want that. We don't want to start out that way. So I would say, you know, the first thing you want to do is think about your climate, the local climate that you're in, and start researching chickens that would be appropriate for that climate. You know, if you're in a place where it gets to be negative 40 for periods of time, you really want cold, hardy chickens. And same for if you're in an area where it gets to be 120 for a period of time,
right,
you're going to want heat hardy chickens.
Yeah, that's excellent advice. I wouldn't have thought, I mean, I guess you should think your climate matters to the animals that you keep, right? Yeah, but okay.
The different breeds have developed resistance to different types of climates. Also, my one neighbor has beautiful, beautiful game chickens. The rooster is just stunning, but they really wouldn't make a good first try. They're very aggressive.
Especially the roosters. The game roosters, like, it would be very difficult or impossible to have more than one rooster together. Like, they can be, I mean, they were bred that way. They were originally bred to fight. So that's in their genes. We don't want that.
No.
That's something to consider. I mean, you can have different breeds, like different breeds growing up together, or if you do a process of integration, because you can't just throw chickens in with each other. Like, they have flocks, they have flock dynamics. That is a real thing. So you definitely want to do, there's like a whole, and I talk about it on my channel, but there's a whole like process of integration of putting chickens together. But chickens that grow up together are like, I have itty bitty tiny chickens that grew up with big chickens, you know, and they just don't know any different. Like, it was so funny. I actually added a huge chicken to my flock this week. And I mean, she's huge. She's like a meat chicken. Mm-hmm. And this tiny chicken, it's called an Old English game, and just weighs a few ounces, went right up to her, stood up on her tiptoes, you know, her hackles were up and everything. And she just jumped up and like attacked her face.
Oh my gosh.
Are you crazy? But it doesn't matter. Like, the little tiny hens, like, they're going to be tough. You know, it just depends on the personality. But yeah, I have all kinds of different chickens together. I rescue chickens. So, and this all has to do with how I feel about chickens in my own life. They really have changed my life. They really helped me to heal in so many ways. And so my way of repaying back is to rescue some chickens. Not all of my chickens are rescues, but a lot of them are. And so I have chickens that are like chronically ill, or they have special needs. I have a duck that's missing something very important.
Oh my word.
You are a good lady.
You are a good person. I have to admit, I'm beyond
good lady. Wow. And what's the duck's problem?
Oh, this is a family podcast.
Oh, okay.
But what I will say is he's missing something that, you know, it just had to be removed. And he's fine. He's no worse for the weather, but it is quite funny that he is missing it. Let's say I just don't have to worry about fertilized eggs.
Oh, my word. Oh, wow. Oh.
And I haven't even announced, I haven't said anything about it on my channel, because I'm like,
how do I get into this one? This is an awful.
Well, you heard it here first, people.
Yes. Exclusive. You've got the exclusive.
So, oh, Dahlia, if I decided to keep chickens,
yes,
what would be a good number to start with?
Oh,
my rule of thumb is one chicken per family member with a minimum of four chickens. And, you know, that's if you're wherever you live. You know, some places are like, you can only have two chickens, which is like, ugh.
Where I used to live, it was two chickens per resident of the household.
Okay. So, well, yeah, there you go.
You could have four chickens, that sort of thing.
Yeah. But I say start out with a minimum of four if you can, because of flock dynamics. So if you have four baby chicks and you lose one, which can happen, you know, I mean, that's why a mother hen hatches out many baby chicks, because she has an instinct that sometimes little baby chicks just don't make it to adulthood. So if you lose one, then you have three left. And so you'll be okay. Like, those can be raised. And even if you lose two, you have two left, and those can be raised. And then once they get to be about 12 weeks or whatever, it's easier to find a chicken that's that same age and you can integrate new chickens with them. If you only get two chickens and you lose one, you have a problem. Because then you have one chicken. And especially if it's a baby chick, that baby chick is going to cry like a lot because they are flock animals. They need the comfort of their species. They don't, you know, it's very difficult for them to exist without the presence of a flock, for them to have those, act out those dynamics that are natural for them. So that's a tough scenario. And, you know, I see people like, oh my gosh, I need a 3-week old baby chick. Somebody please help. I got, you know, I've got this chick that won't stop crying. And that's such a hard scenario. And especially for people that have not, that, you know, that's their first experience with chickens.
Right.
So we're trying to avoid that. And that's why I say start out with a minimum of 4. And if you're a family that really likes lots of eggs, I would say 1 chicken per family member. And you can always grow from that. Like try, you know, chicken math is a thing. Like people go crazy. They see all the different breeds and it's like chocolates. You want to try every one of them. But if you can start out small, it will be less overwhelming for you.
Sure.
And always build the coop bigger than you think you need it.
This is all very good advice. Very good. I did learn that from watching your channel, that they're very social. And they, oh, yeah. Like I said before, they have personality. And that's what made it kind of fun to watch. They really seem to, like the pecking order, you talk a lot about that. You have some videos about the pecking order and that they can get upset when you introduce a new chicken. So it has to be done the correct way. And that yes. kind of thing. I had no idea it was so complicated when it comes to their social structure.
It is. And that's actually one of the things that I talk about with homeschooling families. And I'll say like, I'm in the homesteading community and that's really where I'm at, or pet, you know, some people have pet chickens. And so I deal with people that have chickens as pets. I didn't realize that there were all these homeschooling families that were really, they started out with the course, the online course, and then they were getting the book once the book came out. And I started hearing from these homeschooling families like, oh, we're using it as, you know, in our curriculum. And I was like, oh, well, there's an audience I didn't know that I was going to have.
No, it so, really is no, big with homeschoolers. It really, really yeah. is a big thing. Well, it's so good for children, I think, to have this responsibility and this connection to their food. And a lot of people feel that way. So you're doing a great service with your course and your book and everything. You really are benefiting a lot of people.
Yeah, I
thank
feel that.
Mary
Stoll, we talk about this a lot because Mary Ellen and I, part of our job is to counsel homeschooling parents. And what you run into now, which would have been very, very different, like my dad, who was a depression baby, grew up during the Depression, got his first job when he was 12, was driving a milk truck around the Bronx when he was 14. You know, they just, work was part of their lives and responsibility was part of their lives and taking care of, during the Depression, everybody had a family gardener. You might not eat that week. So taking care of the garden was part of, and what we have now is kids that we're thrilled if they make their own beds.
Yeah,
can you just come out of your room for 5 minutes? You know, like
yeah, but exactly. Could you make your bed? Could you clear the table? Kids don't even have those responsibilities anymore. So consequently, and I think this is a big problem. First of all, we run into it in homeschooling. Like, my son really doesn't want to do his math. Well, really, I don't want to do the dishes, but I do them every day anyhow.
Yeah.
So there's this. They don't have a work ethic. And I think any way that we can build a work ethic up in our home, and that could be through household chores, could be through a garden, caring for some sort of, you know, livestock, all of that makes a huge difference. We have to, and homeschoolers have been bitten by this sort of lazy bug the way everybody else has. Our kids just don't have the responsibilities that they had even 20 years ago.
Yeah. And, you know, I have a saying, your chickens don't care if you want to be on your phone all day. Like, they don't care.
No, they still have to eat and be cleaned.
Great though. I love it.
It's true.
They don't care if you want to play video games. They don't care. They have to eat. Like if they don't care if you're sick, you know, it doesn't matter. And so one of the ways in which they've really helped me is that, you know, I was struggling. It has gotten way better in the last few years, but I was really struggling with a lot of chronic pain and some other autoimmune issues. And it doesn't matter. You're forced to go outside. And I would go outside, and I'm not in any way saying that chickens cure sickness. Okay. No, I am not saying that. But I will say that even on my worst days, I would go out there and do what I needed to do and feel lifted, you know, feel better.
Feel better. You're outside.
At least a little bit.
And you're accomplishing something. And sometimes that little spirit lift is just enough that you feel better physically. If you're outside, you get a little sunshine, a little fresh air, you take care of something, you do something for something else. And suddenly you feel a little bit better. Your pain might not go away, but you feel a little bit better.
Yeah. And one of the ways, you know, if you don't use chickens for any other way in your homeschooling curriculum, a great way to use them is if you are super frustrated, your child is frustrated, you're feeling like, oh my gosh, this kid can't learn from me. I cannot teach this kid. I've hit a wall. And that happens, you know?
Oh,
I mean,
it does happen? Does that happen?
Yeah. So often it does happen. It's been known.
You can go outside and be with your chickens. And I will tell you, there is no subject that does not exist in the chicken yard. I kind of look at it as a little mini society. Like, you can go out there, you can talk about the dynamics, you can compare that with human dynamics. You can do math out there with eggs and whatever else. You can do, of course, science, biology, the cycle of life. And anything else, philosophy, all kinds of stuff. And it will give you that break that, you know, sometimes we just need that little break. We need to go outside. We need to breathe fresh air and have a moment that is different from being inside struggling at the kitchen table or whatever you're doing, that isn't working. So that is certainly that's probably my biggest piece of advice for homeschooling families and really for anyone.
Yeah.
If you're struggling, go outside.
Yeah, that's excellent advice. I think we're going to end on there. Except that you have generously offered to give away one of your books to one of our listeners.
I did.
Yes. Could you tell us a little bit about the book before we sign off? So
I think it's probably the best thing I've ever done besides my online course and having my children and marrying my husband.
Other than that.
Yes. It's called Let's All Keep Chickens, The Down-to-Earth Guide to Natural Practices for Healthier Birds in a Happier World. And I really feel like, you know, I mean, you can get it and you will learn the ins and outs of chicken keeping. Like, it's going to help you if you're a beginner. It will help you if you're an intermediate chicken keeper, especially if you're wanting to kind of lean towards a more natural way of keeping chickens. I am more natural herbs and homeopathics and stuff like that. So there's that. But the other thing is, I really talk about just what it means, like the meaning of chicken keeping, how it can make the world a better place, how it can make you feel better about your place in the world, and just the joy of this practice and what it can do for your family. So that's the part of it that's really close to my heart. So yeah, I mean, it's on Amazon, it's on, you know, Barnes and Nobles, all those places, Tractor Supply, hopefully your local bookstore. If not, tell them to get it.
Yeah, tell them to get it because they will order things for you. That's wonderful. And it's so generous of you to do this for our listeners. And if y'all stay tuned at the end of the episode, we'll give you information on how to enter a giveaway for that and all the info. So thank you very, very much, Dahlia. This has been delightful. I've enjoyed our chicken talk so much.
Thank you, and you're welcome. It was a delight.
Again, we would like to thank our primary sponsor, Seton Home Study School. Check them out at www.setonhome.org for all the information about Catholic homeschooling program that they provide. And we'd like to thank our producer, Jason Lowry, and our social media maven, Beth Egan. Thank you all very, very much, and we will be talking to you again soon.